guardian of the universe. Simply to get the forces of evil. The powers of this man.
Hulk of the sea grave.
Complete tall buildings. Up in the sky.
Is it a bird?
Is it a plane?
A mailman by day.
Cities. Guardian by night.
Defending the citizens of New York.
For centuries, the world has been protected by a group of extraordinary men and women who have dedicated themselves to fighting crime. World's mightiest mortal.
He has powers far beyond the capabilities of mere Earth.
In the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, no, it's a duck.
Welcome to the Marvel Miscellaneous Rejects, the beginning of Percolated Media's look at the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
If you consider it, Kick-Ass, we'd be honored to have you join us.
Join Garrett.
Every duck's got his limit. And you scum have pushed me over the line.
Matt.
I'd appreciate it enormously if you could just leave us in peace until I finish this lovely pint of Guinness.
And Adam.
What I don't know is what the hell I'm doing here.
As they start their comic book movie dive by reviewing the misfits of the Marvel movies.
You don't scare me with that hocus pocus, boy.
Included in this part of the Marvel retrospective is Howard the Duck.
It's Howard, thank you.
Dr. Mordred.
I thought you'd never get back. This guy says he's on a mission from his master to kill you.
His master's dead.
Man-Thing.
I guess they didn't fill you in all the way.
The Kick-Ass films.
Just because you dress like us doesn't mean that you can be like one of us.
Big Hero 6.
Hello, I am Baymax, your personal healthcare companion.
And the Kingsman movies.
You break the law, you pay the price.
Be sure to keep checking the site, as the boys will, from time to time, come back to continue going through the entire slate of Marvel movies up until they catch up on the MCU proper.
Thanks for not giving up on me.
So sit down and open up your favorite Marvel comic, Percolated Media listeners.
And get the cover of Life Magazine, man! Life Magazine? Life Magazine went out of business, you fucking idiot!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast, Marvel Retrospective, begins now.
Are we going to stand around here all day? Or are we going to fight?
Man Thing. Premiered April 30th, 2005, budget of about $5 million, with a box office take of $1 million due to a very small release window, and this was directed by Brett Leonard. Well, we've gone from Lawnmower Man's to the swamps of Louisiana. Boys, we got a lot of questions we're going to answer right off the bat.
Yeah, the swamps of Louisiana, which, by the way, was filmed in Australia.
Oh, we'll get to that, trust me. But last week we did Dr. Mordred, which was an unofficial quote-unquote take on a Marvel character. At least this time we're doing an official adaptation of a Marvel property. But this is not a Spider-Man or a Daredevil or even an Iron Man. We are going into the obscurest of Marvel comic characters for this particular movie.
Yeah, what is going on here? See... When we talked about Howard the Duck, like we mentioned, that kicked off this whole thing of these miscellaneous Marvel characters. This character, I look at him like, is this character heroic? I don't see that. I see this being just pretty much a Freddy Krueger / Jason Voorhees going on. Like, what is happening? This is a horror film. I'm trying to be told that this is a heroic character. Matt, I don't get it.
Well, Adam, I got to go to you because my knowledge of Man-Thing is less than zero, outside of his appearances in Howard the Duck comics that I've happened to see, and his use in Werewolf by Night, which was actually very effective. What's the thing about Man-Thing?
It's amazing. People that love Man-Thing claim that he's got a large cult following. If it's there, I don't know it. I know some creators really like doing him for one or two issues, and that's about it. Liam Sharp did a pretty badass one a few years ago. He was created early 70s by Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway. Technically, Stan Lee gets creator credit, but he had nothing to do with Man-Thing. He and Swamp Thing were created almost at the exact same time. There was going to be a lawsuit, but both of them are rips off of another character from the 40s. So they both went, let's not take this to court. He was created. He's got one run that's pretty famous by Roy Thomas. But other than that, he just kind of appears in and out of other people's comics from time to time, being partnered with Howard the Duck being kind of the most popular run.
Didn't Steve Gerber have a run of this as well?
Steve Gerber, sorry, that's what I was thinking for the run. Yeah, Steve Gerber did three maxi series worth. So I want to say it was like 36 or 40 issues worth. And that's kind of from what a lot of people I know, they're like, just read that and that's it. Other than when he shows up in maybe an annual here or there or a special event or something like that. But that's really about it. And to Matt's point, if you want to see a pretty good interpretation, go watch Werewolf by Night. Which 3 years later, I'm still really pissed off at Marvel Entertainment that they're not doing one of those annually and giving Michael Giacchino the credit for being a pretty fucking great director with that movie.
Oh my God. Hopefully he's a better director than composer. My question. What's that?
Incredibles, bitch.
My question to you is, does he live in the swamp? Does he kill teenagers who fucking boats?
No. My knowledge, I did a little bit of digging. His origin is indirectly associated with Captain America, where he mixes, because of course it's a comic book, he falls into a swamp after injecting himself with the super soldier serum, which was why he mutates into Man-Thing. At least that is a origin story that is far more thorough than what is depicted in this movie.
And that's pretty much what it is. Dr. Salas, years later, is working on something called Project Gladiator, and they're trying to recreate the super soldier serum. Shoot, I would not be surprised if we see this done really soon in a Marvel movie. And by recreating that super soldier serum, and stuff happens and he falls in the swamp and bam, Swamp Thing. Or sorry, Man Thing. Damn, I did it already.
Don't get us sued.
Well, you mentioned the legalities. Is this the most blatant example of one studio just aping another character? While this is nothing new, you have Thanos and Darkseid. You have Deathstroke and Deadpool. This is far and away the most blatant.
Well,
this is as bad as Howard and Donald. I mean, this is bad.
I was going to say, which one came first?
Swamp Thing barely.
Swamp Thing did. Okay.
And comparing it to Swamp Thing, that movie is much more of a superhero movie than this is. In the sense that he's got a backstory. He's got an origin. His modus operandi is more clearly defined. He's got a supervillain to fight. This really does not fit in the superhero movie genre, despite having the Marvel Comics logo clear as day. It is not just Marvel Presents. They use the old logo.
Use that flipping book logo. Yeah.
Yeah. So why are we here? Let's talk about how this came to be. Last time we did Dr. Mordred, which was over a decade before this, and it's fair to say Marvel was in a much better place in 2005 than they were in 1992. So much so that after the success of Blade and X-Men, which were really the two that kind of kick-started the Marvel trend, and then Spider-Man really took it into the next level, 2000, which was the year X-Men was released, Marvel Entertainment entered into a joint agreement with Artisan Entertainment, who was subsequently bought out by Lionsgate. They were a studio. Marvel was still in the process of giving the rights away to key characters. They inherited 15 franchises that they could adapt. Now, these included Black Widow. This included Morbius. Man-Thing was one of them. So in this agreement, they got the rights to all these characters. Now, none of them were A-tier, which is why they went to Artisan Entertainment. Let's be perfectly honest. They literally got the table scraps, because everything of recognition, like your Hulks and those kinds of things, got taken. So they're like, all right, let's do Man-Thing. Now, this was not intended to be the first of these Artisan Marvel crossovers. Do you know what was?
No, I don't.
So Adam's going to laugh when I say this. Iron Fist was going to be the first movie.
Because
they had Ray Park on board to play Danny Rand, which makes sense. It's a martial arts movie. Get a guy who knows how to do it. Mm-hmm. But that died. I think they threw that project into the swamps for it never to be seen again. And they said, all right, let's do Man-Thing. They said, all right, we have this character who is not really a superhero in the textbook definition. Nevertheless, we'll give it a go. So they went into production in 2003. Artisan was bought by Lionsgate, and they said, okay, let's put Man-Thing on the back burner, because now that we have the Punisher, let's do that first. So they made the Thomas Jane Punisher in 2004, and this movie was done by April of 2004. So this thing sat on the shelf for over a year after it was done.
And let's mention too, Matt, you mentioned in the beginning, but we have covered Mr. Brent Leonard's work before when we did The Lawnmower Man last year. This guy's not the brightest light in the chandelier. He has done some really curious projects. This, Hideaway, The Lawnmower Man, which I guess would be considered his most successful film.
One other one.
Oh, Virtuosity, which me and Adam saw in theaters.
There it is.
I mean, Jesus Christ. Which, by the way, when it comes to Virtuosity, I'm with Adam on that. If that's trash, call me a fucking raccoon, because I love that movie.
Yes.
This guy's built like a vending machine, but he can't put any really good movies out. He's in this movie, by the way. He has a part in this. I was blown away when I saw that he was the one behind this. And from what I can tell, it's probably his last big project.
Well, I wonder why. So the movie was done, and they did a test screening. And apparently the test screening was so negative that they just shelved the movie. Which goes to show, there is someone that I don't think we have fairly put on trial for doing more harm to Marvel Entertainment than good, and that is Mr. Avi Arad.
Yes.
He is like the Dino De Laurentiis of Marvel, in that he had a couple really good ideas, but his ego got so overinflated that he thought he was God's gift to Marvel, and if you look at some of the decisions he's made in his involvement, most of them not worked out for the best. Some have been better than others, but this was one that he openly said it was a mistake because they didn't keep tabs on the production.
That's my favorite. I love Avi Arad. He's one of these guys who he is the prototypical Hollywood producer, in that if something's successful, he will take all the credit for how good it is. If it flops or if it bombs with test audiences, he will say the reason why it was because he was not there to oversee the production. He is just that kind of producer that I hated when I lived out there.
And he said, the one hiccup we had, because we were not going to the Outback, we will never do that again. We never should have trusted anybody that far away without our supervision. Because I clearly imagine Avi Arad being there on set every day giving notes would have meant a substantial leap in quality compared to the finished product. But in their defense, there is a place for Marvel horror. Because Blade, for all of its kung fu and one-liners, vampires are steeped in horror. And this character, not just because of his connection to Swamp Thing, the border derivativeness, the idea of doing a superhero horror film, especially a supernatural one, there was a market.
Let's see. So this would have been, this was 7 years after Blade. So, I mean, I guess. Was there a market for horror this extreme associated with comics? I mean, at this point, you'd already had X-Men come out. And like you said, at this point, I don't know if I would have gone this extreme.
I think so, because you also had Hellboy and Constantine. Those are not Marvel properties, of course, but they were very steeped in supernatural.
They were, but they were more underground, weren't they?
Yeah, but so was Man-Thing.
That's what I'm saying.
This had the Marvel brand attached to it, which is the only reason this was intended, by the way, to go to theaters.
Yeah.
Because I do think, at the point, much like horror, the comic genre is that. It seemed as a genre that they could put in a box and sell that way. So it wouldn't be surprised that horror comics, horror movies are kind of what they're using or what they wanted to use to fuel the upstart to it. Because nothing really was a big hit. Batman was persona non grata. Superman was the same route. So other than Spider-Man, nobody gave much of a crap. Constantine did well. Blade did well. So it was kind of like, okay, we need to go horror, supernatural, and find a comic tie-in. And horror is a genre that you could get made by almost anybody because you can pigeonhole yourself into a budget. And I think they were hoping horror comics would be the same type of route. And I think Marvel would be better today to kind of find a way to mix in some of their horror into their universe.
We should also point out that a character like the Hulk has the template of a universal monster. That's Jekyll and Hyde.
And has been a villain in a lot of Marvel stuff throughout the decades. A lot.
So this, I can at least see, like, if someone pitched this to me in 2003, I'd give it the green light, because this was also during Marvel's, I call it the growing pains phase, because they had their success with Spider-Man. And by this point, we had X-Men 2 and Spider-Man 2, which are still regarded as two of the best superhero movies ever made. Is that fair to say?
By a lot of people.
By the vast majority.
Uh-huh.
But outside of that, Marvel was just making movies with any character they had the license to. Daredevil, they made the Thomas Jane Punisher, Ang Lee's Hulk movie. We were about to get Fantastic Four and Elektra. So we were getting a lot of characters that did not have the name brand per se, but they were at least trying as many characters as they could. And there was more variety because you had Elektra, which was a woman. You had Man-Thing, which is a pure monster movie. There was at least a good amount of variety, even though the quality on the whole was not as well regarded as a Spider-Man or an X-Men. And it was right after this we'd get like Ghost Rider, which is also supernatural.
Oh my god. Oh, I can't believe we're going to cover that flaming skull. Oh.
Twice.
Yeah.
So, why has no one seen this movie? Well, there's a reason Marvel has kind of shoved this under the rug. But the reason they give is that, as I mentioned, the test screening was so negative that they said, all right, let's give it some time. And then their second quarter financial report, Man-Thing was listed on their theatrical release. But the test audience has walked out again. So Marvel said, fuck it, we're just going to put this on video, and they'll release it in a couple of markets. They released it in Russia, they released it in the UAE, and they wonder why Russia hates us. And this was picked up by the Sci-Fi Channel, which Sci-Fi Original was a brand in and of itself.
Yeah, we covered Children of the Corn last year.
So this was intended at one point to get a theatrical release, but it never did. But look, the fact that Elektra and Fantastic Four were considered good enough to get theatrical releases this year gives me pause for concern with the decision makers there too.
Yeah, 2005 was not a good year for comic book films.
So thank God for Batman Begins.
Yeah, that's true.
If that did not come out. So yeah, this kind of is the forgotten Marvel movie because Kevin Feige's name is on this.
It is.
And he will do everything in his power to deny that this ever got made.
This is the Star Wars Christmas special to him. Like, he just does not want people to know that he's associated with this.
He's not just associated. This was his. This was really his first one that he was allowed to run with after being an associate on so many films and really earning his stripes. So I know everybody loves that Feige can do no wrong, but he owns this bitch.
We were at the point where the tide was starting to turn because even the movies like X-Men was about to go down the crapper pretty soon. Raimi was about to be booted off Spider-Man a few years from now. So if it wasn't for Iron Man, which we'll talk about in 20 years, Marvel would be a very different place. The history would be very different if the status quo were movies like this. And look, the other thing to note is Lionsgate's other release, the Punisher movie, bombed the year before. And that had John Travolta, look, who's not a megastar, but he's a big name.
That was 10 years after Pulp Fiction. He still had a little bit of pull at that point.
And he was playing the villain. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, you know, a pull, you know, your bigger star plays the villain. But the Punisher did not do well. And that was also acquired in this whole Artisan being bought out by Lionsgate, and they had success with Saw the year before. So I could see them being like, all right, let's try the horror one, because look, this movie was made for $10 at a Snickers bar if you watch it. So
fucking Hostage videos have better production values than this movie.
Your iPhone has better.
Yeah.
Does.
Between this, the Punisher, it was amazing how close Marvel came to, in bankruptcy, selling themselves off in parts. People seem to forget that they'd already filed bankruptcy 1.5 times, and they were really close to doing it again here after this. Mm-hmm. Or right around this time. And Avi kind of using Marvel's credit line to buy hard companies and toy companies as part of that reason.
Yeah. Well, the toy market wasn't involved in this movie because this got a hard R.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which also is outside of Blade and the Punisher. I think those are the only two I could think of that got R ratings at this point. Because I think Daredevil was PG-13, but there is an R-rated director's cut.
That was the first Ghost Rider was PG-13. So, yeah, I think you're right.
So it also was kind of different in that light. But look, this movie should have been rated TV-NA, not applicable to anybody.
Matt, are you showing your hand?
I might as well be another Universal monster. The Invisible Man, because you throw water on me and I appear. Because it's kind of hard to have a poker face with this fucking movie. Between this and Howard the Duck, when a movie has this reputation, look, I'm going to put my cards on the table. There's a reason why most people don't talk about this movie, except for us three douchebags right now. So after the Lionsgate logo, which led me to believe that Jigsaw was going to open this movie.
Right. It had the whole thunder and lightning thing, too. Yeah, I was thinking of that, too. That was when they had that logo.
You know, the patented Marvel panel logo that keeps flipping through.
That shocked me. I was not expecting to see that before this film.
Because if you remember, a little bit after this, they implemented their Marvel Knights brand.
Yes.
Which was intended to be more mature. Like, Punisher Warzone was the first one under that. The second Ghost Rider movie was. I could have seen this being the first in that entry, but no, they used the actual Marvel logo they'd used since what, Blade or X-Men? We open in, oh boy, Dark Waters, which does not describe the DP's equipment on this movie, although we have words about that in a little bit. Getting voiceover narration from a Native American talking about all the sacred land in the swamps that has been taken over by white man's greed, as we see a oil pump and the, I guess, birth of Man-Thing.
A Indian named Pete, by the way.
A fake crying Indian that we used to have on commercials.
Oh, can we talk about the photography in this right away? Because you guys really railed on AVP Requiem. You guys really railed on Solo. And I kind of defended those films in a way because I think that was the way to shoot those films. And I enjoyed the photography in Solo. This... my God, it's all overrun by shadows. And when you shoot in a goddamn tank, this tank looks like when we go to theme parks and we go on those boat rides, that's where I feel like I am when I'm seeing action take place here. This is fucking ridiculous. And I'll give it this, is one redeeming quality. We start right off with a titty shot.
I was getting to that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, that kind of took me by surprise because I know it's rated R, but even then, that's kind of no-no. In a lot of circles. But we see Man-Thing get sort of born, and then we cut to the opening of any Friday the 13th movie, where we have a group of teenagers partying in the middle of the swamp. Now, I've been to Louisiana. I've been to the bayou. I've seen that side. And yeah, there's oftentimes nothing to do. But if you go to New Orleans up the road, there's plenty of stuff to do. But this is what happens when you have a movie that's supposed to take place in America that is shot in Australia. And predominantly stars Australian people who are struggling with keeping any kind of respectable American Southern accent.
Billy. I heard the chick just go, Billy, like she's trying to do the Southern accent. And it's so bad. But this is what I'm struggling with this character. Like, this character comes out with these red eyes. And it's the character that teams up with Howard the Duck in the comics?
Sure is.
Because this movie opens like a Friday the 13th, where not only is this movie have a big environmental component to it, it's got an abstinence thing where if you have sex, Man-Thing will kill you. Even Shrek says, don't get out of my swamp this aggressively.
You could replace Man-Thing with Jason Voorhees, and this is a Friday the 13th movie. You might as well call this Crystal Lake, Louisiana. This is that type of script.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'll give the movie this. It's going to be a backhanded compliment. But I do respect the fact that Brett Leonard didn't really reach beyond his realm. When we see a director take on a comic book property, we'll talk about it when we get deeper into these Marvel films. Hell, we talked about it with DC. When they take on these characters and try to bring something that they're not capable of doing. Brett Leonard was cult in fucking horror. And that's what he's doing here. And I respect the fact that he did not reach beyond what he was capable of doing.
He did not. But the couple runs off and they decide to have sex not only in the middle of a swamp, they walk pretty far away and they get in a canoe. Now, anybody who's been in a canoe knows that it is impossible to sit up straight in the damn thing without it tipping over, let alone have full fornication.
Their legs are hanging off the edge, and I'm just thinking of this chick's legs in this water as this guy's just banging. Yeah, it's so weird.
But you get a full-on boob shot, which I was shocked to see because this aired on the Sci-Fi Channel, which was cable television. It's not like this was HBO.
Yep.
As, like Michael Myers, he just comes out from, I know it's a sex scene, but he comes out of nowhere and kills the guy, blood splatters all over her, and that's the opening scene of the movie. If this did not have the Marvel logo on it, you would think this is some second-rate slasher movie produced by the people who made Captain Planet.
Oh, absolutely. And Adam, I gotta ask you, sir, I mean, how much of this is that character? Does it even look like its comic book counterpart?
Towards the end, it kind of looks like its comic book counterpart. Okay. Here, this whole kind of forming together, like Dr. Manhattan, like the pieces that we see, I've never read one where he looks like that. It looks like it's a ripoff of The Anatomy Lesson, which is a Swamp Thing story. And you barely see Man-Thing until the end of this film. You get weird little glimpses here and there. But when you get the face shot, yeah, that's kind of what he looks like. Huh. But these whole like weird little, I don't know, fringe appendages he's got flying all over the place. I've never seen him look that way. But this shot through the mouth, I swear I felt like I was watching, was it Friday the 13th Part 8, where the dude like gets the spike straight through his head out the mouth?
I lose track.
I believe that was 5.
The one where he brings it back to life in the cemetery.
That's 6.
Oh, that's 6.
6. Yeah. 6. But then I just want to know how many times, because if they were going to pay to get plastic boobs on screen, I want to know how many times they threw fake blood on those tits. Because I have a feeling they Avi Arad's at that. Oh, yeah, good shot. Do it again.
No, he wasn't there for this.
I did say that because he wasn't on set.
Yeah, he wasn't there.
He wasn't there.
Maybe Kevin Feige did.
Well, all right. So the special effects were done by an effects group in Australia. They built a creature suit for the actor playing Man-Thing. There are some digital work, which is blatantly obvious as we get later on in the movie. But they did not have the largest budget to work with. And I at least appreciate that there is some degree of practicality in the suit itself. Mm-hmm. But there's no characterization to Man-Thing. It's just, he is the entity that says, get out of my swamp. They tease his backstory, but there's no flashbacks. There's no actual origin. They only hint at it. They expouse upon what happened, but they never confirm if it's actually true, outside of if you know the character in the name Ted Salas.
I was going to say, they mentioned Ted Salas, and they mentioned that he does kind of become him. By the way, another Indian. He's named Ted Salas. But that's really all the backstory we get. Is that it, Adam? I mean, is that how he's actually a human that turned into this being? Like the Incredible Hulk, where he put something in his body and he turned into this swamp creature?
Yeah, he stabbed himself with a super soldier serum and jumped into a swamp to evade AIM.
Is that smartass or is that serious?
No, I'm being serious.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they were trying to recreate the secret soldier serum. He injected what they had concocted. He's running from AIM. He's injecting it. Did they kill him or kill him not? But he's absorbed by the swamp and becomes Man-Thing.
Okay.
As opposed to Swamp Thing, who gets doused with chemicals and falls into the swamp and gets absorbed by the swamp and becomes Swamp Thing.
Well, I'll say this. Look, Swamp Thing had already done this. So they try to do something different with this because you kind of had to not have those comparisons be too big. So I respect that they actually created an origin that was different than the Swamp Thing, even if it wasn't in the comics.
Now, it's funny you mentioned AVP Requiem, because the following day we cut to the main character of this film being introduced with the young hotshot sheriff, Kyle Williams, who reminds me of, along with this entire main cast, rejects from 90210. This is the sheriff who is all of 25. And when Paul Walker has more charisma than you do, you should never get in front of a camera again.
Yeah, this guy's pretty bad.
He's not believable as a sheriff.
No. Like, I do like the fact that every character calls that out, though. Characters do say, dude, aren't you like too young to be the sheriff? And why are you here? At least it calls it out.
There's an answer to that. And Marvel did that in a comic prequel series they put out for this movie.
No.
He's taken over for his father, who was sheriff.
Oh, okay. Do they mention that in this movie?
No.
No, they only mentioned that the previous sheriff was murdered.
Okay, because I have to say, in watching it for this podcast, I had to rewind it 3 times, guys, because there were story points that I thought I had heard, but I wasn't sure. Like, the fact that I picked up that it was Ted Salas was big for me, because I had to go back and find that. This movie's fucking confusing the way it's constructed.
Good for you for hitting rewind. If my internet would have went out, I would have told you that I kept watching.
So he reaches the town of Bywater, and he's introduced to Deputy Sheriff Frazier, who tells him that previous sheriff is one of 47 missing people who have disappeared since this oil tycoon bought the ancient tribal land from Ted Salas, who was the first person to disappear. So that the big villain of this movie is the Roxxon Oil Company, which I thought was the name they were going to use, because that ties into Marvel Comics, at least.
And Adam, you're saying that sheriff was his dad.
It's not in this movie.
No.
But they had put out a prequel that states that, is his father that was killed, and he's there as the new sheriff to take over for his father's sheriff.
The only character in this movie I like is the coroner.
Who's played by the director.
Yep, and you can tell there's no regulations because he's openly smoking a cigarette
while
conducting an autopsy. I'm pretty sure that goes against every health code that there is when it comes to that kind of work.
You didn't like the Transformers chick?
Oh, I'm getting to her. Oh,
okay.
The Williams is told to go settle a disturbance at the oil field, who is owned by Fred Schist. Now, this guy I know, who plays the main oil guy, because he's in a lot of Australian movies, which is where most of this cast comes from.
Matt, I didn't know you watched Australian movies. Like, was he in The Reef? Where do you know this guy from?
Oh, he's from, like, the new wave stuff from, like, Club, Sunday Too Far Away.
Oh, okay.
Peterson. So he's a pretty reputable Australian actor. And I think he's the one person in this movie who is playing up for the schlock that it is. Because he might as well be friggin' Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, I do like this guy. You're right. The majority of people in this cast are playing it way too fucking serious.
Yeah, which is the conundrum this movie is in.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing the horror, quote unquote, straight. But by doing so, the actors think they're in a serious horror movie. Well, 95% of them do. Some of these people are right out of a Warner Brothers cartoon and are so exaggerated that it feels like there's no reality in this at all. But he's telling all these hippie protesters to get off his rightfully purchased oil land, including Rachel Taylor in her first movie. Now, she's a Australian model. She has that in common with Estella Warren.
Yeah.
And like Estella Warren, she has the acting ability of a rock.
She's pretty bad. She's more dolled up in Transformers, but she's just as bad in that a couple years later. At least she's not a huge part of this film.
She's in it enough.
Yeah.
I would say too much. She's much better in Jessica Jones.
I forgot she was in that.
Because, look, that was like 10 years after this, so she learned. I guess she got acting lessons in between then. But her accent goes in and out constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's actually quite good in Jessica Jones. But in this one, I don't know, it's like casting looked at her and went, is that Allie Larder? No? Not close enough. Get her on set. Because my note is not Allie Larder does this, not Allie Larder does that.
She kicks the sheriff right into the dirt, and he picks her up and throws her in the car. So clearly he's not going to be smitten with her whatsoever, which I think this has the record for the most forced romance we have ever seen in a comic book movie of any kind.
Dude, by the end, they're fucking kissing, and she's wishing him good luck. And I'm like, wait a second, when did this happen? That was another time I had to rewind and see if I missed something.
Yeah, earlier in the movie, she basically told him to eat shit.
Yeah.
And there's really no interpersonal stuff that leads you to believe they would develop a serious relationship outside of he's cute. By the way, he has the eyebrows of a Vulcan, which is right off of him. Takes her in for questioning, and we find out that she's a third grade school teacher, so that gives her the right to be a break the law, I guess. In Bywater, which is an actual town. This is a neighborhood in New Orleans, but you don't see Bourbon Street whatsoever because they couldn't afford to shoot there. But they also couldn't because this was shot in Australia, and let's not forget that Hurricane Katrina was the year before.
Yeah, that's true.
So you really couldn't have, if you wanted to shoot, but oh yeah, you can clearly tell this was shot in Australia, not just because of the bad attempts at accents, but the swamps in this do not match what you would see in Louisiana.
No, absolutely not. In fact, it looks like it was, and it probably was, filmed at a tank. They probably decorated a tank up and shot there because the water doesn't even feel murky. You know what I'm saying? Like everything's so goddamn dark, you really can't tell. But I look at that and I'm like, that doesn't look like a swamp to me. You can put all the frog sound effects and all the bug sound effects and all that you want. I still don't believe that this is a swamp.
Yeah, it's like they have one section of the tank that they've put some trees, but it's one river trail. It's the same depth. It's the same length. It doesn't really feel like it leads anywhere. But then there's parts where it changes to be like 10 times bigger than it should be. We're getting a little bit more introduced. He goes into town, sees the other locals, including the two brothers who might as well be four generations away from being inbred.
These two. Holy shit.
What is it with every movie that needs to have Creole, that needs to be Louisiana, that needs to be every single movie? They must do a Google search and the name Thibodeau comes up. Because every fucking movie in New Orleans or Louisiana has got to have somebody named Thibodeau in the damn thing.
Not only that, everyone has to be a blatant racist.
Yes.
Of course.
But not to black people, because there's not one to be found in this movie. They're racist towards Native Americans, which I'll give the movie this. It's more respectful to Indian culture than Firestarter.
Which we're going to get to. I don't know, man. You call a Native American Pete. I don't find that too respectful to the culture.
Yeah, Peter Horn is the guy's name who's there. And he draws Man-Thing out of sugar from the coffee pot, which just like, okay. So he knows that something is going on. He tells him that there's this guy named Rene LaRocque who is sabotaging the facilities of the oil company, and that should be investigated to find a connection to the missing people. So this movie is structured like a procedural, a murder mystery, except the mystery is so blatantly obvious that it's ridiculous that it takes the sheriff this long to figure out who's behind it. This is, I say this a lot, Scooby-Doo is a better detective story than this bullshit.
This is so amateurish. And at this point, Brett Leonard has been a director for 20 years. You'd think he would at least have a grasp on how to tell a story, but this is terrible. It's so bad. Adam, I think Virtuosity had better detective work than this movie has.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I gotta say, though, I think the only reason, and it gets more insulting as the film goes on, but I think the only reason that they have the Indian, if they call it the Native American part to this, is because that is part of Swamp Thing's history, but not in Louisiana. It's because when it happens to him, it happens in the Florida Everglades on Seminole land. So I think they're trying to shove it into Swamp Thing's story, which is home of Louisiana, and they just confuse themselves with how they're doing it.
So you're saying instead of Bourbon Street, you should have gotten a casino?
Yeah, pretty much. Or FSU, either way.
Or on the FSU campus for the Seminoles.
Yep.
He tells him that the local legends about the guardian spirit are real and that he should go investigate. So we then cut to the next night where the oil guys are on patrol, and we see that Man-Thing is not one for subtlety because he blasts the guy through the wall and makes no attempt to be inconspicuous because he leaves him with plants growing out of his body.
You mentioned that most of this is practical. Here we see a lot of CGI. Now, is this what he does, Adam? He just protects the swamp? Does he have to be summoned? How is this working?
I know very little. I know that supposedly he protects the nexus of the swamp. I don't know of him doing this ability where he literally makes plant life grow out of you. That is the other one across the street in the distinguished competition who literally has that ability. This one, I know he can literally melt you down and do a bunch of other things, but I don't know of this ability. And I don't know. They're trying to create a horror monster, and I think there's a realm for that. I think that the impulse is right, but I think they're really confused on how to do it.
Well, Blade had the advantage when it came out to be released around the time that Buffy was really high on people's radar. This is coming out. I don't know what audience you're looking for here. You're looking for a horror audience? Are you looking for, I don't know, people who are trying to protect plants? I don't know what audience this is for. That's my struggle here, is most of these characters have an enemy that they are trying to push back on and prevent from taking over something. I'm not seeing that here. I'm seeing the title character be a monster, and I'm so fucking confused onto whose side to root for, who is who. This movie is just so poorly put together that I don't know which end is up on it.
Yeah, we never get that human portion of who Ted was. We don't see that. All we get is this swamp monster, and it's inconsistent with what they are trying to tell here.
And from what I remember, I barely remember Craven Swamp Thing, but at least there was an impetus and there was an in on that. I'm not seeing an in on it.
Well, yeah, you get his backstory where he was a scientist who got murdered. And
the monster interacts. Yeah. Nobody's interacting with Man-Thing here.
And he doesn't speak, which also doesn't help. But yeah, he's written just like a slasher villain where he just shows up to kill people. You don't know his intent. Like, should we sympathize with him? Because they allude to the fact that Ted Salas might have taken the bribe or he was murdered. Like, that's not definitively said. So I think the lack of intent in this story makes it almost impossible to follow or be the confines of a superhero, because this could have fallen into the Crow where it's like a vigilante story. He's out for pure revenge. Mm-hmm. The framework is there for that, but it's not definitively stated. So we then cut the next day to Williams investigating the swamp and the murder scene, and goes back to the coroner and tells him that it's just a gator attack. Lake Placid the same.
No, I thought of Anaconda too. Like Anaconda, Anaconda had come out 10 years before. Like even that was better than this.
Yeah, like I think this movie needed the tone of something like Lake Placid, where it's so friggin' ridiculous. And that is purely tongue-in-cheek. I mean, that movie is a black comedy. I would argue it's almost a pure comedy. This is trying to play as a straight horror movie, right down to the tropes of the Drifter, who's the main character. We've seen that a million fucking times. The monosyllabic monster who doesn't say anything. If you have sex, if you separate from somebody, you get killed. All the tropes are in this movie. It's just none of them are done well.
By the way, there's a reason why this movie is not told very well. It's by the writer of Lost Boys 2. And what a fucking resume this guy has. And if we eventually get to The Lost Boys, I don't know if we ever will, but his writing is just as bad there. Wasn't there somebody, Kevin Feige, Avi Arad, these guys who claim to have power over each and every comic book prop, each and every Marvel property, and make sure that they have quality control? Where was the quality control here?
I love how this is the one even Dave Gore was like, I am out.
Right.
Even that man has his limits. Yeah. Things. Touch with a 10-foot pole. So the next night, Williams and his sheriff go off into the swamp, but before doing so, they go to this guy who's basically a tourist trying to get, for all intents and purposes, he's trying to get photos of Spider-Man.
He's trying to get photos of Nessie. He's the,
Yeah, they mentioned, you know, he saw the Loch Ness Monster when he was a kid. He bought a house, and he's living in a shack on the bayou with two dogs, which I see no way where this would be acceptable. And his partner tells him, you know, to stay here in case he comes back. And Williams does the cliched horror thing of, I'm going by myself into the swamp I've never been in before. And through sheer coincidence, which, holy crap, this movie has a lot of conveniences.
Yes.
The previous sheriff's body just falls on top of his car.
Halloween 6 like.
They say he's been missing for weeks.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, because he's driving his Jurassic Park Jeep through the freaking swamp, which those roads are not big enough to drive through a swamp.
This is when I had a Garrett moment and I thought I missed something. I was just like, wait, did something? I wasn't going to go back and check, but I thought I missed something here.
The only thing that's missing is half the sheriff's body.
His lower half.
So he puts him back and he tells him once again it's a gator attack, but Williams thinks there's more to this story. So he goes back to the Thibodeau brothers, which might as well be the Marvel equivalent of Beavis and Butthead.
I thought that was Avi Arad and Kevin Feige.
No, because those guys, much like Beavis and Butthead, have actually done some good things.
Yeah, that's true.
He tells them, you know, to look for trouble or stay out of trouble because he thinks that Schist has hired them to go track down LaRocque, which whenever we see LaRocque, he shows up like freaking Morpheus from The Matrix, where he just does, right. he's like a shaman where he just pops in and out of the movie, does some ninja shit, and just disappears.
Disappears, yep.
Was Steven Seagal busy?
2005? I don't think so.
I mean, he could have played Man-Thing, but he probably wouldn't have fit in the costume.
Right.
Although they cast a 7-foot ex-wrestler. So we now know there's paychecks that Kevin Nash will turn down. So they go back into the swamp the next night. The monster takes care of the two Thibodeau brothers, but not before some terrible jokes about how coffee makes them shit.
Oh my God. Who wrote this? Vince Russo?
It might as well be, because this movie is, we're literally throwing shit at the wall.
And it's not a quick one. It's a shit joke. He goes back, it keeps going, then comes back, and it keeps going.
It keeps going, yeah.
And he literally does a pratfall into his own shit. So throughout all this, Williams is trying to track them down, but he gets ensnared by LaRocque, who admits that he helped Schist buy the land. This guy might as well drop a smoke grenade and leave for all of his exits, because this guy thinks he is making Enter the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this guy in a couple things. There's two Matrix alumni in these movies. It's this guy and the Bigfoot Hunter guy. They're both in the second and third Matrix movies.
Yeah, he was in those Matrix sequels. I caught that. Because I looked at him like, oh, that guy looks familiar. And I looked him up, and yeah, he's from the Matrix sequels.
Yeah, this guy was the captain. Yeah. And then the other guy was working on, I think he was working with Jada Pinkett, that group.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, I guess they needed work. But he hangs them up like freaking, it's like when the Ewoks capture everyone or the Jedi. Where this guy's like Rambo, he's booby trapped the entire swamp. I guess he lives out here? I did not explain that.
So funny. I'm dying for Ewoks at this point.
I'm dying for Kermit the Frog to show up. Where you came. Insists that the guardian spirit will keep on murdering until Schist stops ruining the sacred swamp. So again, being told that the oil company is the reason why Man-Thing is killing everybody. I thought Deepwater Horizon wasn't for another 10 years.
And let's make it clear, there's like one rig they put out here in the swamp. Their logo looks like the hammer and sickle from Nazi uniforms. But there's one rig that looks pretty, I don't know, not too intrusive out here in the swamp.
Yeah, not enough to overthrow the entire ecosystem. This would have ruined the town's economy.
And I don't know, could Ted just maybe destroy that? You know, simple?
Or at least show up to the new sheriff with proven evidence and testimony that the oil guy and the other guy killed?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no impetus here. Which apparently
shows, yeah. Frazier tries to help LaRocque, but the Man-Thing timely appears and kills off the deputy. The one person who I thought was actually decent gets killed off. And Williams gets knocked out in a cartoonish way, where he gets bopped on the head and is unconscious, and then wakes up 3 hours later and goes like, ugh.
Have one guy completely just destroyed for the other guy to, yeah, get knocked on the head and knocked out. It's just Looney Tunes behavior.
So silly.
Williams wakes up and finds the guy who's got blurry pictures of Man-Thing. I mean, I think those are just dailies because it's so dark you can barely see the costume.
Oh my God. Yeah. And apparently they did have, I don't know if you mentioned this or not, they did have somebody in a Man-Thing costume at some point. So at least they tried for the practicality, but it looks so bad. And again, when you have no real background on this character, you have no way to judge whether you like it or not. I'm just bored by this movie because I don't know who to pay attention to.
When you take pictures of your Man-Thing, you got to get it in focus.
Oh, I knew that was going to eventually come on here, that we're going to get the Man-Thing jokes.
I mean, this movie is the biggest joke of all.
Right.
The fact that they pumped $5 million. It's like that oil company. They pumped $5 million into this little, their own pool of Marvel, where it's like, we want to get in on the race too. It's like they sat down at the poker table with not enough money to buy in properly.
Adam, please tell me you don't have a Man-Thing figure.
Oh my God, no.
Thank Christ.
No. I don't need one. Look, when Marvel puts out their special collection, it's literally called Giant Size Man Thing. They're in on the joke.
Oh my God. I tell you. Well, I'll get to that when we finish up here. Go ahead.
You finish with your Man Thing? I don't want to. The following day, Williams wakes up and he interviews Schist, who denies any involvement with what happened. And he takes the school teacher, who for all intents and purposes, her story should be over. But he loops her back into the movie because she's the only woman in this movie. And they go see Horn because they raised her like a Native American, even though she's as white as snow. It's the Last Samurai problem where they were held prisoner, I guess, so they just get acclimated to the culture, you know, it's white privilege. And Horn basically gives 10 minutes worth of exposition about the Man Thing and Ted Salas, and almost does the Yoda thing of, I'm going to go lie down and die. You guys have to leave.
I cannot believe you made another Star Wars reference here. I can't believe it's two Star Wars references in a Man Thing review. Shame on you, Matt.
Well, this is about the same production value as those Ewok movies.
Yeah, you're not wrong there.
So, all right, this is where it gets ridiculous.
Oh, now's the point where it gets ridiculous. Yeah, okay, yeah, I need to hear this.
The last 20 to 25 minutes of this movie are
just... 1 hour mark, folks.
Where now they clearly have developed romantic feelings because it's a trope. We've got to stick to it.
Yep.
So Horn goes in there, tries to chant with the Man Thing and says, he does the exorcist thing of take me instead. And Man Thing's like, okay. So Man Thing is just a bloodless, he's a mindless monster.
Yeah.
Good guys, but it doesn't matter. He just kills.
Yeah, he's like, it's like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. It's like, if you're in my way, I'm going to dispose of
him. I mean, if Jason fell in the swamp, this is what we'd get.
At least Jason was quote unquote dumb enough to be duped by a sweater.
That's his redeeming quality? How does that compare to Man Thing here? Again, I'm trying to see when this thing was created. When was this created? This was, what, the 60s when this was created?
No, it's got to be the 70s.
70s? Okay. So there's got to be like an environmental angle or something going on where he's trying to protect the green or whatnot. And they call this
Swamp Thing says protect the green.
Yeah. And this is literally like the dark water. They keep calling it the dark water. And I'm just like, if it's called the dark water, why do people keep going there?
Well, it's the same reason they keep opening Amity Island.
That's true. Yeah, which we'll get to.
It'd be a great tourist attraction, apparently. So now all parties are converging because Schist takes his moronic son. Because apparently if you live in Louisiana, you have no IQ whatsoever. You can't think for yourself. You're just a mindless simpleton. And I love how, because it's the South, they think that you can just get high-powered weaponry. No questions asked. These guys have like assault rifles and bull shotguns. And the only reason the sheriff has a shotgun is because it was locked away in the office. So he shoots the tourist guy because he's trying to get more pictures of the monster. And throughout all this, they realize that the monster didn't kill the sheriff because they did an autopsy and conveniently found a bullet. So rather than arrest him diplomatically or by the book because he's a cop, we get full-blown vigilante justice in a swamp.
I guess.
I can't believe that. I really thought that photographer was going to stick around and get some sort of happy ending. I can't believe that, but that was just mean-spirited and unnecessary. And
at least they didn't kill the dogs.
True. And that you have a body that badly decomposed. It's only half a body. You got stuff growing out of everywhere, but a bullet fragment just happens to be able to stick around in that body.
That's what happens when you use adamantium bullets. I mean, if they really wanted to be shameless, they would have said he was working for the Daily Bugle. Would have been the worst example of them trying to associate with Marvel.
I was going to say, I was glad I at least didn't get any real associations there. Like, I was glad that the sheriff wasn't like, well, at least this doesn't have to do with that guy dressed as a spider in New York. We don't get anything like that. This is its own contained entity, I guess you can say, which, again, is another backhanded compliment. But this came out the same year as Blade 3. And I mean, it wasn't like you couldn't do horror and a comic book movie, but this movie just misses the mark because it's just like we're seeing it formed and then we see it, quote unquote, destroyed at the end here. And then, of course, they obviously ran out of money at the end with these effects. Guys, I don't know what my end is here. I'm so bored to tears by this movie.
Schist murdered the photographer guy, and he then runs back into Richards, who tells him about the autopsy, because she just happened to be at the office when he called, because, God, this movie's convenient. And according to his confession, he murdered Ted Salas and buried him in dark water. That's the closest we get to a definitive origin, but they never show his body mutating officially. We never see Ted Salas as a character. He's only mentioned by name. So everything as far as the framework of a origin is just not done whatsoever.
And I can't think of a reason either. Then they were either too cheap, there was no reason time-wise they couldn't do it, or they realized that it was so close to Wes Craven and that version of Swamp Thing that they were going to get sued like a sumbitch.
So William Richards, I mean, look, you have a Marvel movie with someone named Richards, for God's sake. Because really, the only thing she has in common with Mr. Fantastic is them trying to stretch this out to 90 minutes. So Richards reveals that she knows how to get to the lair where LaRocque lives, but the Man-Thing is still chasing them. So they go to the drill tower, and he has already rigged it to blow, because he's going to blow it up and be home in time for cornflakes.
How does nobody in this I don't know. This seems like the most simplistic ending. Okay, anybody can blow this up. The camera keeps panning back and forth between a big model and a little model, but it's just like, everyone's wanted to call him Swampy again, but when Manny shows up here, he's going to kill the guy that's blowing up the thing that he wants to destroy himself, that other people... This movie. Yeah,
it's the enemy of the enemy is my friend.
Yeah, Adam, I need to stop here because I need to ask you. You said in the beginning of this podcast that, towards the end, he turns into what he looks like in the comics. At this point, with all these tentacles and things, is this what he looks like?
The tentacles are a little much. Those tentacles sticking out of his body. But the rest of him, especially the face, he's got a very distinctive face that looks different than Swamp Thing. And that's really where the difference is.
Okay.
That face and the really just looking like an overgrown moss patch, that's pretty damn accurate. Again, if you want a good version, please go watch Werewolf by Night, people. It's shorter than this, and it's worth it.
It's shorter than this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
50 minutes? It's a TV special. It's like, oh, not wow. Even an hour.
There's a really cool black and white version, which is how it was originally shot, and there's a color version. You would like it, Garrett. I think you'd surprise
yourself.
It sounds
like I would, actually. You guys are kind of selling me on it.
Especially black and white, it feels like Hammer horror.
You mean Universal?
Yep.
I was going to say, yeah, Hammer is a little colorful.
Especially with red.
Yeah, yeah.
So Schist shows up and he shoots both LaRocque and the sheriff point blank, but the sheriff lives because he's the main character. When the Man-Thing arrives and pumps him with oil in the most blatant attempt at ironic deaths, I guess, not feeling much of anything outside of boredom.
Yeah.
So he turns himself into a pump, but then I was like, is it the oil he's pumping into him, or is it the dark water he's pumping out of himself?
It actually feels similar to what he did 13 years ago when he did the Lawnmower Man. They overdid him with intelligence, and here they're overdoing this thing with oil, and I'm just like, oh my God.
You're right. It does feel like Job.
Yeah, it does. And as you mentioned, Matt, we get the chick from Transformers. She's here towards the end as the love interest, and somehow she shows up to watch this thing blow up and help. I'm just, wow. I cannot believe the incompetency on display here.
Well, speaking of incompetency, Man-Thing slowly moves towards the survivors. I guess he was going to say thank you, but they don't let him explain himself because the other guy blows the bomb. But Man-Thing lives, but gets sucked back into the land.
Yeah.
We did that shot once, so let's do it in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the ending of Ang Lee's Hulk, where I can't tell you what's happening. Yeah. I can't explain it. It's just a big creature feature.
Why? Why would he be reverted back into the swamp?
Irony, Adam. Irony.
And especially if it was just destroying the rig that did it, you have that ability. It's a giant monster. Oh, God. Dang you, Kevin Feige.
And that allows Richards and Williams to leave. And as abrupt a fashion as possible, the credits start rolling. No epilogue, no tease of him surviving, not him leaving the town. They kill the monster, quote unquote, and that is it.
Yep. You know what, guys? You guys have trained me, because at this point, I was thinking, I was like, okay, did Kevin Feige started even here, where he was going to put like a teaser at the end of this thing? So I did fast forward through these credits to see that, which I'm going to do when we get into these films, because you guys have railed me enough. Yes, I will make sure I stick around for the closing credits, but nope, it doesn't start here. You're right, Matt. Creatures killed. Roll credits. We're done.
And that whole notion of the stingers, that goes all the way back to the first Blade.
Yep.
Because if you remember, that was intended to have a Morbius tease at the end,
yep.
but they couldn't because of legal issues.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sony. But yeah, but that still had a tease at the end afterwards.
It did.
That's the end of 2005's Man-Thing. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this this footnote in the Marvel pantheon? Adam, what say you?
I knew this movie existed. I've heard this movie, being that I've seen everyone before. Of course, I've seen this movie up until now, right? Nope. Never had, never bothered. I watched the trailer once years ago, and that was enough to convince me I never needed to see this film. Thanks, Matt. this is, you know what? I Children of the Corn prepped me for this kind of schlock, and this is as bad as some of the worst of those. This is a horrible film. It is shot poorly. It is staged poorly. It is written poorly. The tank that they use to film this thing in is got like three different setups, and they use it over and over and over. For two-thirds of this movie, they're just kind of walking around town and walking around the swamp waiting for shit to happen. This is... Marvel's lucky they recovered from this. I mean, I guess because they only sunk the little amount of money into the dark water that they did. But this could have ruined the company. This could have finished splitting up Marvel. So it's kind of astounding that it didn't, and that they got a partnership after this to continue making movies, because this, doing it on their own, would have ruined the company. I firmly believe that if this is what they were putting out. There is nothing really good in this film. Lionsgate should be embarrassed that their name is on this thing. And Lionsgate puts out some shit, but
they put out Mangler 3 the same year, Adam, so...
I know, but look at this thing, man. Yeah. This is insulting to have the Marvel logo on it. And even the decent parts of this movie aren't from Man-Thing's history. It's from Swamp Thing's history. Is even more insulting to somebody like me who loves Swamp Thing. This thing is a steaming dark water of crap. And thank goodness I never have to watch this again. I'm giving it a 2 because we got two boobs on screen. And... that is it, and I think that's being very generous for Man-Thing 2005.
Well, generosity, I guess, grows on trees in the swamps of the bayou. Garrett, what about you?
Oh, man. You know, if I ever met Brett Leonard, I would shake his hand and congratulate him on one thing, that he gave me and my best friend a good time at the movies in 1995 when he released Virtuosity. But as far as the two movies we have reviewed on this network, he is 0 for 2. And I'm sure he's a nice guy. But my God, Marvel was just in its infancy, as we've mentioned. And there was something to be done here. I do think there was an inkling of a story. But this is not the guy you have handle a story like this, because he's going to take it back to his roots. So, oh God, I can't believe I just said that. He's going to take it back to what brought him to the dance. And this movie is so incompetent. I've said all my pieces. There's no characters to grasp onto. The monster's ridiculous. And if there was some kind of backstory, some kind of thing to actually make me care about it, the fucking title character of your comic book movie, I could think that maybe I could give this a decent score. But still, even with that, this movie's poorly cast. It's got some really, really bad photography. It's got some really bad digital effects, and it's got some really bad direction. I'm sorry, Brett Leonard, but this is one of those movies that I think the best time I had with this was discussing it with you two. And if it wasn't for you two, I would not have watched this movie. This is a fucking swampy mess. And I want to go, I'll go one higher than Adam. I will give it a 3 because of the horror touches. But really, this is a slog. And don't go near this. Even if they come out with a rendition of this that is watchable, I would still say, you know what, leave it, like Howard the Duck, just leave this in the back burner. Don't watch it again. 3 on 10 for Man-Thing.
I have to issue an apology to someone that I raked over the coals on a previous superhero movie. I think Pitoff has found some company in the cellar of comic movies that should have killed the genre, and it's amazing they did it, because this is an incompetence I have not seen since Catwoman. Except for all the terrible things I have to say about Catwoman, there's some entertainment value to be had there in a couple of instances. This, outside of just the barest of horror tropes that they indulge in, mostly in the opening, there is nothing redeemable about this. Superhero movie, it fails. As a horror movie, it fails. The main character that this movie is named after is an afterthought in his own movie. There's nothing to recommend. I mean, you could make a case this is worse than Howard the Duck. It's in that conversation as far as being just failure in almost every capacity. So I'm going to side with Adam. This is a 2/10 for me. I am never going to watch this again. You know, this is one thing you watch for completionism and then throw it away, never to be seen again. But I'll give Marvel credit. At least they brought Man-Thing back in Werewolf by Night. So it shows that they recognized, oh yeah, we fucked up. Only took them 20 years.
And now Regile on my rating, I'll give it a 2 as well.
All right. Well, we already got him to cave. Because we're getting out of the woods of Louisiana, quote unquote, and next week we're returning to the big city of New York, but not for a proper Marvel movie. We're going with something that was an offshoot that spawned two movies and kind of deals with what if superheroes, quote unquote, existed in real life. It's going to be a kick-ass conversation because that's what we're talking about next week. I have not read the comics that it's based on, but I know of them. Adam, what is your background in the world of Kick-Ass?
I know of it. I actually haven't read the comics. I've read a lot of Millar's stuff, and I enjoy quite a bit of it. Talk to me about Wanted someday, people, because I can wax on that one. I watched the original movie once on a random afternoon when it was on TV and was kind of struck by some of the things that it had to say about the genre. And I just never got around to Kick-Ass 2 for no good reason. I just didn't. But other than the movie, I'm kind of ignorant to it. But I know a lot of people really, really love it as one of the first true deconstructions in superhero media that was put out there.
Yeah, the fact that I've read Mark Millar extensively is exactly why I have not read the comics it's based on. Garrett, what about you?
Oh, God. After what we just reviewed, it's going to be the light at the end of the tunnel. I have good memories of next week's film, which is surprising because when it came out, I was in, as Adam knows, I was in the most toxic relationship of my life. And that movie gave us an hour and 50 minutes of joy. And we talked about it for a while after it was over. I've only revisited it one time, and that was before Kick-Ass 2 had come out. But I do have good memories. So I'm looking forward to this revisit to give it a fresh set of eyes 12, 13 years after I have seen it last.
I also have not seen this in a very long time, but I remember having good things to say about it. But most of my recollection of it is exclusively with one or two characters. And I'm pretty sure you can guess who they are.
Yep.
So I'm curious to go back and rewatch this. So we're almost through the outliers in Marvel. We got Kick-Ass, Big Hero 6, and Kingsman. But after that, we're taking a break going back to another retrospective that we've had in the works. But I'm very excited because we've got a lot of trailers lately for movies that we will be reviewing this year. So it's going to be a big year as far as new releases as well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, since we last taped, we've had trailers for Jurassic World and Fantastic Four, both of which we'll be covering. Will we be recovering Man-Thing anytime soon? Who knows? Maybe they'll make another movie, but I don't see that happening.
I don't know how.
Well, until next week when we review Kick-Ass, can you smell that, Sheriff? It's the podcast of my future. Point, click, fame. I'm gonna be risky.
Life is so like a party. I know what you're gonna say.
I should be proud of myself because I'm finally using my gift for something important.
No, I was just going to tell you your fly was down for the whole show.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Congratulations. Bloody well done.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
You're right about the snobs, but there too, there are exceptions.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Pretty fucking great.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
How was that? Not so bad. Kind of fun, huh?
Check out the Percolated Media archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Incredibles movies, the Planet of the Apes franchise,
the Lethal Weapon films, the Alien franchise,
Jurassic Park, Park, and so many more.
Okay, you cunts. Let's see what you can do now.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
Words to live by, Exit. Words to live by.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
As long as your heart's in the right place, we don't care what you put in your mouth.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
I feel like a tornado in a trailer park.
Scheduling done by Matt.
I'm trying to figure out how to explain this without sounding like a complete idiot right now.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Playtime's over, kid.
I never play.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
What the fuck are you doing here? You taking a piss?
Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
You really believe in all this?
I believe that when a man's chest becomes an insect's palace, when his eyes are gone and his limbs ain't there no more. When I'm so scared I want to handcuff myself to my bed to keep from coming to work. Yeah, I believe it, man. I believe I don't want to die, Sheriff.
Show's over, motherfuckers.
She kicks dirt, or she kicks the sheriff right into the dirt. We then cut to midnight at the oil field where Swamp Thing quote-unquote strikes.
Man Thing.
I should say Man Thing. Yeah. I might keep saying Swamp Thing, but Adam did it too, so we're both guilty.
Say it again so I can edit it out.
So we then cut to the next night where they... Although they cast a 7-foot ex-wrestler. So we now know there's paychecks that Kevin Nash will turn down. Although, I mean, can't say Punisher's that much better.
We'll get there. I think there's some redeeming qualities about that
film. He gets the best scene in it,
yeah,
at least.
He does.
Although it wasn't worth him dyeing his hair that ridiculous blonde.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So you remember... They did an angle sidebar because this movie blows. They wrote that into a storyline. Jericho, he lost a hair versus hair match to Jericho, and that explained why he bleached his hair blonde. No. I'm not going to go make the Punisher.
Wow. I didn't even know he was still wrestling at that point.
Well, for a little bit. He did the Elimination Chamber, wrestled for 3 minutes, was the first guy pinned, took his paycheck and left.
Wow.
That was during the Reign of Terror in 2003, which describes Marvel's run in 2005 for all intents and purposes. I think the ratings were about as positive, too. So they go back into the swamp the next night. This is Trailer Park Boys nonsense.
Yeah.
I swear to God, Vince Russo? This feels like a bad Tim and Eric.
Matt, did you hear Adam's line?
No, say it again.
Say it again.
Who wrote this? Vince Russo?
It might as well be. They go into the swamp to try to stop the man thing.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Should I just call him Mr. T?
Yeah.
Because I pity the fool who worked on this movie.
I said, beat it!
Mutants.